And you have to really deeply ask the question, what is the adverse business impact if a deprovision event occurs? And then say, well, maybe perpetual licensing is the right fit for me. So, if you need any advice on that, as always, feel free to contact us via email or phone at qualityplusconsulting.com.
This is WGTD. You're listening to Education Matters, the only weekly broadcast in southeastern Wisconsin devoted exclusively to a discussion of local educational issues. Education Matters is co-hosted by Karen Sconsert, an associate professor of education at Carthage College, Jeff Rasmussen, a retired Racine Unified teacher and administrator who currently serves as president of the Racine Area Retired Educators Association, Steve Brown, a retired professor of education leadership, and former Kenosha Unified School Superintendent Joe Manji. Now, here's today's Education Matters moderator.
Hello, I'm Karen Sconsert, and this is Education Matters. Today, you will hear another program in our special series recorded from home due to and about the COVID-19 crisis and how it is affecting educational programs in Southeast Wisconsin. Today, we have guests from the Kenosha Literacy Council. Cheryl Hernandez has served as the executive director of the Kenosha Literacy Council for 6 years and has worked with the Literacy Council for the past 13 years. During this time, the Kenosha Literacy Council has seen tremendous growth. She works to ensure that KLC provides innovative, research-based literacy programs and continues to strengthen its presence in the community. Welcome, Cheryl.
Hi, everyone. Thanks for having us today.
For 8 years, Cassie Christensen has supported Kenosha Literacy Council's adult learners. In her role as program coordinator, she welcomes new learners and works to ensure the Literacy Council provides innovative research-based literacy programs. As the lead instructor of KLC's ELL Civics program, she utilizes experiential learning methods that allow students to develop English skills and become active participants in their community. Cassie also provides training and resources to equip KLC's volunteer tutors. Welcome, Cassie.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
And last but not least is Susan Remsen. She is a volunteer tutor with the Kenosha Literacy Council for over 10 years. She's retired from her prior career in clinical diagnostics and biotechnology. The volunteers are really the thing that fuels the Literacy Council and allows them to have their programs. So thank you for doing that, Susan, and welcome. It's good
to
have you.
Thank you very much. Nice to be here.
So it has been a challenging several months for everyone. It's kind of hard to believe. The world feels very different than it did at the beginning of March, right? I imagine that things at the Kenosha Literacy Council have been really different. But there may be some listeners that aren't familiar with the Kenosha Literacy Council and what you do. So could you just describe the Literacy Council in normal times for our listeners, Cheryl?
Sure. Well, things are really different right now, but the main goal is still the same. The Literacy Council is a nonprofit organization that works with adults in Kenosha County to help them improve their English reading, writing, and speaking skills. So we see firsthand at the Literacy Council how adult literacy is a factor in almost every socioeconomic issue, things like parenting, healthcare, workforce development, and poverty. And we really believe that literacy is a basic human right and the foundation for all other learning throughout our lifetime. So our programs teach reading and writing and speaking skills to adults so they and their families can achieve financial independence, good health, and greater involvement in our community. We offer a wide variety of different kinds of programs. Most of the tutoring and instruction is done by volunteers, and all of the programs, again, are aimed at helping our learners improve their English literacy skills so that they're able to meet goals specific to their needs. Last year, we had about 219 volunteer tutors that helped provide 12,000 hours of instruction to 529 learners from 40 different countries. So it's a very busy place with lots of great work happening.
40 different countries. I bet that's a very surprising number to a lot of listeners. Do we have like a a sense of where all the, I'm sure you all know where the countries are. So where are most people coming from that need some additional help with their English?
So 40 different countries. We have students from every continent except Antarctica. but most of our students are from countries where Spanish is the first language. So lots of countries.
Okay. So then my next question I'm going to ask this of each of you is sort of what were you doing before all of these changes of the last 3 months? And what do you do now that's different? And how did you make that transition? In many cases, I'm sure it was quite abrupt, but let's start with Cassie. Maybe tell us a little bit about what you your role is like before, how it's changed, and how you got to this changed point.
So as a program coordinator, the main responsibility that I have is to be in contact with our students and our volunteers, in addition to planning programs. So before COVID hit us, it was a lot of in-person communication. I was often in the classroom setting, communicating with volunteers and students, and then also with registering new students and training volunteers. So I had a lot of contact with them. And although the communication methods have changed, I've definitely been able to keep that communication up. We're using a lot of virtual communication with emails and then Facebook, but also phone calls and things like that. And because we are using virtual learning tool Zoom, we're able to see each other face to face, and that has been able to allow us to keep that communication up. And then also with programming at the Literacy Council, like I said, it's always been in person, but now we've transitioned to virtual learning, and I've been pleasantly surprised that people have been ready to jump on board with that. So the transition, luckily, was pretty smooth, considering we had people that were willing to do that. So
that's great. I'm going to jump to Susan just to ask a little bit about what it's like to be a literacy tutor, and then maybe how your role changed a bit as we transition to online learning or other ways that you might have changed. Susan?
Over the last number of years, I've participated in several different ways in tutoring. Mostly it's through the drop-in program, which is a program at set times where students can come into the facility and are assigned a tutor, and we work with that individual for the 2 to 3 hour session. I've done that probably once or twice a week. I've also taught the citizenship class that's given through the Literacy Council, as well as worked with some of the other students on special projects. Truthfully, I'm doing about the same thing now, except I don't have to commute. I don't have to go anyplace. I've been assigned students to work with, and we meet on a regular basis. And pretty much, except for the issues of technology on occasion, it's not much different than I've done before. Obviously, it's in a different setting, and there are some things that are lacking because of that. The social interaction is a little different. The break time. One of the interesting things about the Literacy Councils, we always take a break during a 3 hour session, and it's a socializing time. The socializing isn't there, and that socializing between tutors and students, as well as between tutors. And I think everyone misses that. But as far as learning, I'm seeing a lot of good learning going on, and I'm enjoying the tutoring online.
We'll probably get into this a little bit later, but I'm guessing that there will be some students who find it much more convenient, especially if they have small children or whatever, that they can just log on. But we'll hear more about that later. So Cheryl, how has your life as executive director changed since before? What were you doing before with a lot of your time, and how has it changed since then?
Sure, so as executive director, a lot of my job has to do with administrative tasks, right? Lots of office time, lots of meetings and phone calls and emails and keeping all of the records straight and kind of managing things that way. So obviously I'm still doing all of those things. I actually have been, I feel really fortunate because I continued coming to work throughout the kind of COVID crisis. So the library was, the building was closed and the Literacy Council space was closed as well. So I was the only one here, but I think it really helped me to be able to come into work and be in my office and in my space every day and kind of keep that routine. Cassie worked from home, and so I know that was a bit of a transition for her in the beginning. But really a lot hasn't changed about the tasks that need to be done. I just spend a lot of time on Zoom now.
Right.
So, you know, it's just a whole day of meetings on Zoom.
Right. Well, so my next question is about which things can be done from home and over the internet and which really cannot. And one of the things that really stood out to me is that you do a lot of fundraising in the community. And I imagine that that's all had to change quite a bit.
Yeah, we do a lot of community engagement things, both for fundraising purposes and for kind of recruiting new students. And so a lot of that has changed drastically and probably will for a while to come yet, right? You know, in the fall, we would always go into the schools for open houses. We generally work with the local school district to be able to have classes on site in schools. And so all of that will be different for the year to come. And for fundraising, we definitely, you know, had to go virtual with that too. We've been very thankful to have had some successful Facebook fundraisers, and we did an online auction, and so we can kind of continue some of those things virtually. It's definitely not the same as getting everyone in a room together and being able to talk about the Literacy Council and the powerful kind of life-changing programs that happen here.
Right. So this can come from any of you. What do you think has been the hardest part of this process of shifting to online?
I think from a programming perspective, it's definitely about internet connections and access to technology. And then also making sure that our volunteers have the skills that they need to be able to instruct the students, making sure that they feel comfortable when they're using it. And with our population, our students, in addition to their very limited language skills, can't say language today, they also have limited digital resources. So because maybe they don't have the best income, they can't afford to have internet in their home, or maybe they don't have the tools that they need, like tablets and computers. So many of our students are using smartphones to do all of their learning, so I just can't even imagine using my smartphone at home to complete all of my office work tasks, you know, creating documents and things like that. It would seem impossible to me and be very frustrating. So that is what they have to be able to continue their learning. And then also, you know, to take on those challenges, we've been able to provide tablets and things for some learners and help them find the resources that they need to be able to get internet in their home. But every student is different and every student's exposure to technology is different. So we've had to find ways to connect with every student, whether it be through Zoom or if it's Facebook, or for some students, maybe it really is just a phone call, right? So it really depends on their level.
Mm-hmm.
I think in addition to that, just kind of that first week of thinking of the logistics of how to offer our programs, and then implementing that just within a week after the closing. So we really put a lot of work into that first week of closings to make sure that we had a program that could run effectively on Zoom. And we wanted to do that. We knew that was so important to get people going right away, because we didn't want their momentum and their motivation to learn to be, you know, disrupted for any reason. So as I said before, we were fortunate to have volunteers that saw the value in that and just jumped on board with us right away. So
I was thinking as you were talking, how hard it is to explain technology challenges in person. And then it would, you know, it's compounded by the fact you're trying to do it over the phone with someone whose English skills may not be the same as yours, or your Spanish skills might not be the same as theirs. And you're trying to do this all over the phone. And I'm just thinking about how complicated that is, because I find technology glitches, and I'm sure listeners do too. That's like one of the hardest things about this. Technology is amazing, but it's not necessarily easy. And here you are trying to do this with many different platforms, different devices, different modes of getting online, all kinds of things. So that is a challenging thing. I'm going to ask that question of the rest of you too, but I just want to start reintroduce that you're listening to WGTV HDFM. I'm your host, Karen Sconzert, and this is Education Matters. This discussion of the Kenosha Literacy Council's response to COVID-19 is archived at WGTD.org on the Education Matters page. You are invited to listen again, or you can find our WGTD Education Matters Facebook page and join a discussion there. So, Susan, you were talking about how it's very different because you're missing sort of the socializing part of the work as a tutor and socializing with your students, which is a big part of learning, really. Is there anything else about this that you found to be difficult, either for you or your students?
Well, initially it was difficult just understanding how to use Zoom. Cassie was really good about showing us, but I tend to use a lot of writing on the blackboard. Mm-hmm. You know, when I speak and I use paper and I put a lot of stuff, and it took me a while to figure out how to do that with my students and to communicate with them through the chat or through using additional the whiteboard thing. So that took me a while to figure out. And I generally work with a higher level of students, so they were pretty comfortable with the technology. I just completed a citizenship class. We just ended last week, where often what we do is one-to-one tutoring or two-to-one tutoring, but the citizenship class was a group. And that was a little bit more difficult because I kept dropping people online. You know, I'm thinking that somebody's there, and then all of a sudden they're not there, and having a conversation.
I so think
that
so.
Was
Are
difficult.
They coming back?
And the one part of that is that, somebody would leave and I'd say, okay, what happened? But in the citizenship, in order to take a citizenship test, there are three components to it. It's writing, speaking, and reading. And I had no problem with the reading and the speaking part, but I couldn't figure out how to get them to write. You know, I wanted to see and to dictate to them and to see what they were coming back with. So that was a little frustrating. But once we got the technology, for the most part, I was actually pretty comfortable with it. And I'm comfortable personally with technology, so that helps. And so were my students for the most part. So
that's good. Cheryl, since you're the administrator, I'm sure that one of the components that may have been hard is financial stuff, but maybe I'm wrong. So how has that been? Have you had to do any furloughing or reductions in hours? And have there been some maybe unexpected good things, like people say, oh, here, take my whole stimulus check or something like that?
Well, yeah, I'm waiting for a phone call to come, if anyone wants to hear that. yeah, absolutely. Before we get into that, I just want to, you know, take a second to say thank you to Susan and Cassie and all of the volunteers, definitely during this time. You know, everyone has had to have just loads and loads of patience, right, and to be able to go with the flow more than ever before. Even when there was a plan, it would immediately change. And so we've definitely been dealing with a lot over the last few months, and it wouldn't have been possible without kind of that, the people willing to be so patient and willing to try new things. And so I think we're really fortunate to have had a great team to help get the Literacy Council through this time.
to talk a little bit about, you know, fund development and those kinds of things. Our biggest fundraiser of the year, we really only have one major fundraiser. It's our annual Spelling Bee, and it's a great fun event. And this year we were on target to bring in about $45,000 from that event, which is a huge part of our budget. And it was scheduled for the last week of March. So you can all guess if we did not have the Spelling Bee. It's been postponed, and we hope in the fall to be able to do some kind of event still. But I think that was a huge to be able to have that major event for us. But we really have been fortunate this year. We are in a very healthy financial position. And so that hasn't been a huge concern for us. We also were able to apply for and receive a forgivable loan through the Paycheck Protection Program. So we haven't really had to think about reducing hours or laying off staff or anything like that. And I also think it's really important to note that no one has ever stopped working. So all of the staff are working even harder now. So even though our physical space is closed and we're not, you know, having in-person classes, we never closed. We never stopped providing programming. And we needed to very quickly transition to virtual learning. And so that, you know, really staff is busier than they have ever been before, probably, so that we can, you know, continue the work that we do. And we really do still need the community's support so that we can continue to provide those programs. So I mentioned before, we've done some fundraising online using Facebook, and we did an online auction, and we would certainly welcome donations at any time to our program, and people can just go online to our website to be able to do that, or give me a call and tell me you want to give me part of that stimulus check. We would love that too.
That would be great. You rely on volunteers for tutoring. Are you still taking volunteers? There may be some listeners who have more time than they have in the past. Maybe not, but I'm wondering if there's anything that people should know about volunteering and how they would get in touch with you to do that.
Sure. So Cassie is, as our program coordinator, the one that works with all of the new volunteers, so they can reach out to Cassie and let them know that they're interested in volunteering. She's just finishing up today, actually, a tutor training that we did mostly virtually. So we used Zoom for them to learn about their tutoring, which is a little more challenging than our normal tutor training might be. And we're hopeful in the fall to be able to do some training that's more in person. But we'd love to, we still definitely have a need for volunteers. We have Zoom options, and I think we're going to talk a little bit later on. We're transitioning back into opening up to do some in-person classes and tutoring as well. So there are both kinds of options for people depending on their comfort level and things like that.
So what's the number, website, and email that people might want to use to contact Cassie?
So we're KenoshaLit.org, and you can find, when you go to KenoshaLit.org, her email address or our phone number, but it's 654-7323. And then her email address is just her first name, Cassie@KenoshaLit.org. So Cassie at KenoshaLit.org.
Great. And I will just make a pitch. I was an adult literacy tutor several decades ago in Chicago, and I have to say, I've been a teacher, it's been, oh geez, now we're up to like 35 years now, and I cannot tell you how profound the experience was for me. It really was the best teaching experience I've ever had. and so I would highly recommend, if people are a little bit on the fence, to at least look into it and contact Cassie and talk with her about whether it's a good fit for you, because if you have a little bit extra time, but maybe you don't feel like you can donate or money or anything, but you have time, it might be a good way to go. So that's my pitch for you. So have you quote reopened, and when, or what process are you in right now about the services you've been able to resume, and how has it changed, and how are you distancing in your space? Because it's not a big space, as I recall.
So at the moment, all of our classes and tutoring are still only virtual, but we are hoping, we do have a plan in place to gradually start to reopen in July. So July 6th, we hope to be able to start having some in-person classes, but we will continue virtual learning as well. So we're going to kind of do a combination of both. Obviously, our main concern, our top priority is ensuring the health and safety of the staff, of the students, and especially our volunteers. So the majority of our volunteers are in a category that puts them at a little bit higher risk. And so
it's okay to say that.
Everything we can to keep them safe and healthy. So some of the health and safety precautions that we've kind of put in place is when we do reopen, everyone will wear masks. Obviously we'll do lots of hand washing and hand sanitizing. We'll have lots of disinfecting of the learning spaces and things like that. But we've also rearranged the learning spaces to allow for more distancing. So we've removed tables and lots of chairs. So the spaces are much more spread out so that tutors and students have that social distancing in combination with wearing masks. And we also are using some plastic dividers to kind of go between tutoring pairs. So maybe they're not as distant from each other, but they have this plastic divider from them. So we hope that, you know, all of those things combined will do a good job of keeping people healthy. We also look forward to being able to do some programming outside. So we've already done some family activities outside where we can be socially distanced and have masks and things like that. But we look forward to doing some tutoring and classes outside as well.
As long as it's still warm enough, right?
We're all, a little while.
I don't think I've ever been more appreciative of summer than I am this year, right? Because we can
actually
go lots of places. I wonder, and this could actually, any of you could answer this, what worries you most about your students during this time? You know, so I imagine that with limited English skills or limited literacy skills, that your students probably are performing a lot of essential services, that might be the sort of job category that they're in. And I know a lot of them also have children who are probably trying to learn from home on the same smartphone or whatever they're trying to use. So sort of what has sort of come up for students around those kinds of issues, and what has worried you the most about them?
Yeah, you've definitely nailed most of the challenges head on. We work with a vulnerable population. They have limited English skills. They have limited incomes. They often have very limited family support because they're here, just their immediate family, and they don't often have a lot of other support in Kenosha with them. So really, the students are relying on us. I'm at the Literacy Council for a sense of community and a safe place and a place where they know they can go to get clear, accurate information. So that's definitely something that we don't take lightly. We want to make sure that we are that support system for the students and that we can be providing with them with as whatever resources we can and providing them with good, accurate information. And so I think that's definitely been a big challenge for us. The students are, many of them, essential workers, and most of them haven't stopped working, and they don't have the privilege of working from home. They don't often work jobs where that's even an option, and a lot of them really are actually working more now because there's lots of overtime and things like that, so work is definitely a big concern for a lot of the students. And then Cassie can talk a little bit about the transition for the students who are dealing with school at home and their kiddos.
Yeah, so that was probably one of the largest concerns of many of our students. They value education so much, not only for themselves, but for their children. They know that that's kind of their ladder up. And when the schools closed, that was probably the biggest concern that they shared with us is, well, what's going to happen? Is my child going to know and learn the information that they need to be able to be in the right grade next year? So we have a lot of students who came to us for resources to have things for their children to do at home that were appropriate for the grade level, but also how to communicate with their child's teacher, how to get the homework that they needed. If they needed to print things, then they would come here and ask us to help them with that. So we had, we were lucky that we knew somebody from the district. We know a lot of people from the district, but somebody who was willing to come in and kind of speak with our students about what, you know, the future of their child's education looks like, and give them some tips and tricks to help them continue learning over the summer. So we, you know, that's just one of the ways that we were able to be a resource for them and their family as a whole.
Mm-hmm. Susan, were there any particular concerns among your students that came up during this process of going online?
I will say that the students that I worked with did not express any. I think I felt a little bit of it because I was concerned. I was concerned that they didn't have the right information. I'm always concerned that when you are not an English speaker and we have the media, we have social media, that things are not always clear and interpretation doesn't always do a good job of letting people know. So I think I was more worried about it than they were. And I found myself during this time saying, do you understand? Do you know what this is about? And being careful. And one of the things that as a volunteer, before we actually start our lessons, we always have some conversation. And I would always be sure to say, how are you? Or, you know, how is this affecting you? My students were usually pretty okay. A couple of them had dealings with children that perhaps they were in and out of the session. So, okay, I have to go take care of my kids. But I think I was more worried than they were.
Mm-hmm. Let me just take a quick reintroduction break here. You are listening to WGTD HDFM. I'm your host, Karen Sconsert, and this is Education Matters. This discussion of Kenosha Literacy Council's response to COVID-19 is archived at WGTD.org on the Education Matters page. You are invited to listen again, or you can find our WGTD Education Matters Facebook page and join in a discussion there. So what is there something, and maybe this is a crazy question, but I just wonder, if there's something the general public probably would never think of or doesn't know about the challenges of trying to run a literacy program when you can't meet in person? Like, what has been sort of the weirdest part of this?
I think from a programming perspective, and Susan has definitely mentioned this, is that community is so important for our learners. And we spend a lot of our time, building that community within our learner population and our volunteer population. If you're a new person to the organization, that first day can always feel a little bit uncomfortable. So we always make sure that we get current and new volunteers and students to bond. And then a huge part of our program is engaging students in their community. And we focus a lot on field trips into the community. We visit hospitals and we visit banks and stores and parks and museums. And we haven't really been able to do any of that and get them involved in a personal way. We've been using virtual means, right? So we use websites and things like that, but it's not nearly the same and doesn't have the same impact as doing it in person. So,
right. So what typically happens during the summer at KLC, Cheryl, and what have you been doing differently this summer?
I think some of the things that I always really look forward to in the summer is we have a graduation. So our ELL civic students graduate, they finish their program for the year. And we also, so as part of that graduation, we also recognize many other students who have accomplished goals throughout the year. So maybe they've completed the citizenship classes or a book club class. Maybe they've moved up a level in their books, and we celebrate all of those accomplishments. And we haven't really been able to do that this year. And so I will very much so miss that. We are working on some plans to still celebrate those successes, but it won't be that same big graduation kind of event. And then we also always go on a big field trip at the end of the year, kind of traditional school year. And so this year we were going to Madison to visit the Capitol and probably do something else fun in the area. And that's always a really great chance to get all the students and their families together to have some new experiences. And so miss that as well. Again, we're going to do something a little more local that allows us to, you know, people can drive in their own cars and we can be socially distanced when we get there. But it's not quite the same experience. So I'm missing out on some things. I'm definitely trying to make the best of it still and celebrate accomplishments with the students.
Yes, I the virtual graduation is not one of my favorite things that has come out of this experience. Yeah. But there may be some things that have sort of made you look at things differently. And so is there anything that that you have learned that you might continue to do, even after full contact is allowed again someday?
So I think one of the fun things that we have been doing, just because it's a good transition back into in-person kind of things, is more outdoor learning experiences. So we've done some family literacy days and meetings that have been outside, and definitely as the weather allows that, we hope to be able to continue that into the fall. I also think that, you know, we've really taken on the virtual learning and using Zoom as a method for tutors and students to learn. And for some of them, it is beneficial even when we're not talking about viruses and keeping everyone healthy. There are other reasons where it's more convenient for some of our students. A lot of our students are moms, and in the summer they drop off because their kids are all home from school. So if we can continue virtual learning with them, it's a way to keep them engaged and in classes and learning, even though they can't come in person as often. So I think that kind of, you know, kind of developed this idea of a Kenosha Literacy Council Digital Academy, and that's something that we foresee using in the future as well, even when COVID-19 is over.
So we have about 5 minutes left, and I want to give you plenty of time in case you have a really good story to tell about maybe something that has been a surprise or a reward that has come out of this experience, or a change in the relationship that you have with a student or their family that might have been positive. Just so that, you know, people kind of get a picture of a great thing that we maybe wouldn't have learned without having to deal with this crisis. So I wonder if Susan, can you start?
Yeah, I actually had something happen yesterday that was a pleasant surprise. As I said, I'm teaching the citizenship class, and it's a group of people. And noticed in the background of one of the individuals some beautiful paintings. And I said, who did that? And I learned that they were done by his 13-year-old daughter, and an amazingly talented young woman. I would not have been seeing that. A few minutes later, one of the other students went and brought a piece of sewing that she had, and then turned her computer around to show us her sewing room and what she does. And the third person shared something personal. And I would not have been in their homes and seen them in the same way. And I think when we see people in their homes, as you're seeing us here, there's a recognition of the additional component. It's not just a student sitting across from you. And so that personal aspect actually for me was kind of sweet. And as I said to this individual, I said, I'm going to watch for your daughter because she's going to be very talented. And that was a really nice surprise.
Great. Cassia.
Yeah, I definitely think for us too, in the beginning, that was one of the really neat kind of surprises or neat perks to virtual learning, right, is that we got invited into everybody's homes and we get to know everybody just a little bit differently by being able to see their homes. And Cassie taught with her dog. We got to meet the students' pets and see their kids on their laps, and just learn a little bit more about them. And I think that that was a really special part of this experience and one of the perks. But I also think one of the biggest takeaways really will be that all of us kind of came together. So students and staff and volunteers were able to work together, and we very successfully have created this virtual learning and kind of gotten through, hopefully, are getting through the situation together. And so, you know, just the idea that we're all working together and are stronger as a community, and by doing that, we can kind of take on these challenges and adapt and change and overcome obstacles.
And I'd also like to say that I was impressed with the number of students who made the effort to come to virtual learning. When I first heard that we were going to do virtual learning, I was sure that the volunteers would be okay with it. Wasn't sure that the students would be. And I was very impressed with the motivation that they wanted to continue during this time.
Right, that is a surprise too. If there are any potential volunteers listening, let me just tell you that that is one of the great things about working with adult literacy students, is that their motivation levels are through the roof. You know, like that they have so many reasons to want to become better at literacy skills. And that's always been a big plus. Cassie, do you have any stories or interesting things from this period that were a surprise to you?
I think I would just kind of agree with Susan and Cheryl. We were able to, as a teacher, I was able to use tools that students had in their homes, right? Because we spend a lot of time on real life skills. And so being able to connect the learning directly to their lives, you know, for learning about measurements or something, we can ask them to go to their kitchen and pull out some measuring cups or a ruler, or we did a measure the area of your home or a room in your home. So I think just kind of the application of what they're learning directly to their lives. Mm-hmm.
That is pretty great. So we just have about a minute left. I want to give you another chance to pitch for volunteers or for funds or whatever else that you think you might need in the way of donations before we go.
Yeah, so as our community recovers from COVID-19, adult literacy is going to be even more important than before, I think, as people are returning to jobs and things. And so we really need the community support to be able to continue to provide the life-changing programs that we do. And so in any way that you can support us, we appreciate that. Come and learn about volunteering. We'd love to put you to work. Please donate if you're able to, or just show your support by sharing information about our program in the community. Follow us on Facebook. You can learn more about the Literacy Council at KenoshaLit.org. Check us out on Facebook, and we hope to see you virtually or in person soon.
Great. I want to thank my guests today, Cheryl Hernandez, Executive Director of Kenosha Literacy Council, Cassie Christensen, who's the Program Coordinator for Kenosha Literacy Council, and Susan Remsen, who is a longtime volunteer with Kenosha Literacy Council, who does tutoring and teaches citizenship classes. Thank you all for this wonderful service that you provide in the community. For listeners, if you'd like to hear this program again, please go to the WGTD.org on the Education Matters page, and you can listen again, or you may find us on Facebook at WGTD Education Matters and join in a discussion there. I will put the Kenosha Literacy Council website on the page for this show on the Education Matters page. So if somebody's listening and they want to find us on Facebook, that would be another place to go. So thank you all very much, and best wishes.
You've been listening to Education Matters, heard each Saturday morning at 10:30 on WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. Archive programs are available on our website, WGTD.org, and you're invited to continue the discussion on the Education Matters Facebook page. Support comes from Gateway Technical College, hosting an online seminar July 9th for students who may be interested in enrolling in one of Gateway's 21 fully online degree programs. For more information and to register in advance, go to gtc.edu/quickstart.
From the WGTD Arts and